Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So we did an episode about the tremendous breakthrough that Google announced with Gemini DeepThink. A really interesting concept coming out of DeepMind, Google's legendary AI lab, in which it's not a new model, as some people seem to think, but it's a really extended reasoning mode using Gemini 3 Pro. In order to take the idea of what happens if we can delay inference and continue with this reasoning process and stretching it out really far. And the quantum physics proof was certainly pretty impressive. So what I'd love to ask you in today's episode, Herman and Corin, is I mentioned that I looked at the model card which Google released. This was in PDF format. When I hear the word model card, I typically think about Hugging Face, and whatever format that comes in usually is kind of a README, so I guess a markdown format. But it's kind of the equivalent of a data sheet in the world of technology, or that's how I think about it. It's kind of, instead of summarizing the marketing and the hype around the model, it's trying to give kind of a digest of what's actually here architecturally. But I'd love to know a little bit more about the history of the model card. For those of us like me who are coming to AI after it's gotten big, but these things have been created for quite a number of years. And what I'd love to understand a bit more, Herman and Corin, is when labs are releasing these model cards, what is the information they're sharing that might attract the interest of people? Because a lot of them talk about, you know, model, mixture of experts, that's the architecture. These are the parameters, but that stuff is at the current time fairly commonplace across models. So what I'm always interested to know is what are the interesting morsels here? And when we see the pre-training and post-training, not having done training on a commercial grade large language model, I'm always intrigued to know what are the things that are being shared that might be interesting. And especially for the maybe smaller or more innovative AI labs that are trying hard to break into the mainstream, what are things to watch out for if you were spending time digging around on Hugging Face or just vendor literature and coming across these and trying to spot what actually is interesting in the constant sea of information we have, not just in technology in general, but specifically in AI, which is, I think it's probably fair to say at this point, the fastest moving tech vertical that there has ever been. Everything that comes before it seems relatively genteel in terms of how it evolved. So Herman and Corin, I'd love to get a expert's guide to reading these intelligently. What are we looking out for? And besides Hugging Face, what are some good places to find them if you wanted to get that data sheet, which is always, speaking of data sheets, maybe we might do one episode about them because those are the gems. They make me smile as a tech documentation person. And I think a lot of that goes into the writing of these. Okay, Herman and Corin, over to you two.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corin, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother. It is a bit of a chilly February morning here. The sun is just starting to hit the stone walls outside, and we've got the kettle going.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. It is a beautiful day to dive into some documentation. I have my tea, I have three monitors glowing with LaTeX PDFs, and I am ready to get granular.
You say that with such genuine joy, Herman. It is infectious, even if most people find the word documentation to be a powerful sedative. Our housemate Daniel sent us a voice note earlier, and he was asking about something that I think a lot of people see, but maybe do not fully appreciate. He was looking at the recent Gemini Deep Think release, the one that just dropped a few weeks ago, and the model card that came with it. It got him wondering about the history of these things and how to actually read them without getting a headache.
It is a brilliant question, Daniel. Most people treat a model card like the terms and conditions on a software update. They just scroll to the bottom or look for the one number they care about, like the parameter count or the MMLU, Pro Score. But if you know how to read them, especially in this early 2026 landscape, they are more like a biography or a forensic report of the model. They tell you not just what the model is, but what it was raised to believe and where its blind spots are hidden.
Exactly. Daniel was asking about the history, what labs actually share beyond the basic architecture, and how to spot the truly innovative stuff on places like Hugging Face. So, I think today we should give the listeners an expert guide to reading these cards intelligently. Where do we even start with the history, Herman? Because this was not always a thing. In the early days of machine learning, you just got a file and a prayer.
Right. If you go back to 2015 or 2016, you were lucky if you got a README file that said, "This is a convolutional neural network, good luck." The concept of a model card is actually a specific invention. It really took off around 2019. There was a landmark paper titled Model Cards for Model Reporting, and the lead authors were Margaret Mitchell and Timnit Gebru, along with several others at Google and elsewhere. The core idea was borrowed from the world of hardware and electronics. If you buy a capacitor or a microchip, it comes with a data sheet. That sheet tells you the operating voltage, the temperature range, and the failure rates. Mitchell and Gebru argued that AI models should have the same thing.
It is interesting that it came from a place of ethics and transparency rather than just technical specs. It was about saying, hey, this model was trained on this specific data, so it might not work well on that other data.
Precisely. It was an answer to the black box problem. Before model cards, you would have these massive models being released, and nobody knew if they were biased against certain demographics or if they had been tested for specific edge cases. The original proposal for model cards was focused on 9 specific sections: model details, intended use, factors, metrics, evaluation data, training data, quantitative analyses, ethical considerations, and caveats. It was a push for accountability. It said that performance is not a single number. It is a multidimensional map.
And now, fast forward to today, February 17th, 2026, and they have become the industry standard. Whether you are on Hugging Face or reading a technical report from OpenAI or Anthropic, the model card is the starting point. But Daniel mentioned that a lot of them look the same now. They all mention transformer architecture, mixture of experts, and trillion-plus parameters. How do we look past the boilerplate?
That is the key. You have to learn to spot the signal in the noise. When I open a model card on Hugging Face today, the first thing I look at is not the architecture. Almost everything is a transformer-based mixture of experts these days. That is the baseline. What I look for first is the data mixture and the data provenance.
When you say data provenance, what specifically are you hunting for? Because we scrape the web is the standard answer, right?
Not anymore. In 2026, we scrape the web is a confession of laziness. Truly innovative labs are being very specific about their ratios. For example, a good model card will tell you the percentage of the data that was code, the percentage that was mathematical reasoning, and, this is the big one for this year, how much was synthetic data versus human-generated data. If a lab says they used a 2-to-1 ratio of synthetic reasoning chains to web text, that tells me they are prioritizing logic over just being a fancy autocomplete. I look for mentions of the FineWeb or DCLM datasets, which are these highly curated, cleaned-up versions of the internet. If they are using raw common crawl without explaining their filtering, that is a red flag.
That is a great point. And I noticed in some of the more recent cards, like the one for LlamaFall or the Gemini updates, they are getting much more granular about the decontamination process. That seems like a big deal for the integrity of the benchmarks.
Oh, it is massive. This is something every listener should look for. Data contamination is when the questions from the benchmarks like the bar exam or the MMLU accidentally end up in the training data. If the model has seen the questions during training, its high score is just a memory test, not an intelligence test. An innovative model card will describe a rigorous decontamination pipeline. They will explain how they used n-gram filtering or semantic embedding searches to make sure they did not cheat. If a model car does not mention decontamination, I take their benchmark scores with a huge grain of salt. In fact, some labs now use LLM decontaminators, other AI models whose only job is to scrub the training data of test questions. If I see that in the card, I trust the results much more.
That makes sense. It is like a student showing you their test score but refusing to tell you if they had a copy of the answer key the night before. But what about the stuff that is more subtle? Daniel asked about what makes something innovative. When you are looking at vendor literature from someone like Google or Meta, what are the red flags or the green flags?
A big green flag for me is the mention of post-training interventions. Everyone talks about the pre-training, which is the months of crunching data, but the secret sauce is usually in the fine-tuning. Look for terms like direct preference optimization, or DPO, or reinforcement learning from human feedback, RLHF. But even more specifically, look for process reward models, or PRMs.
Wait, explain PRMs for a second. We have mentioned them before, but how do they show up in a model card?
Standard RLHF rewards the model for the final answer. A process reward model rewards the model for every single step of its thinking. If a model card says they used PRMs, it means they are training the model to be right for the right reasons, not just to guess the right answer. It is the difference between a math teacher who only looks at the final result and one who gives you partial credit for your work. That is a huge sign of an innovative reasoning model.
I remember we talked about that a bit in episode 512 when we were looking at the evolution of constitutional AI. It seems like the model card is where they actually have to put their cards on the table about how they are steering the model.
Exactly. And here is a pro tip for reading these. Look at the limitations and risks section. In a lazy model card, this will be three sentences of legal fluff saying, "Do not use this for medical advice." In a truly useful, high-quality model card, the developers will be honest. They will say, for example, "This model struggles with spatial reasoning in three dimensions," or "It has a tendency to hallucinate specifically when asked about historical dates before the year 1800. When a lab is that specific about where their model fails, it shows they have actually done the work to understand it. It gives me more confidence in the areas where they say it succeeds.
That is a really counterintuitive way to look at it, but it makes total sense. Honesty about failure is a proxy for the depth of their testing. I also want to touch on the environmental section. A lot of people skip the carbon footprint part of the model card. Is that just a PR move, or is there technical value there?
It is both. On one hand, yes, it is about corporate social responsibility. But technically, it tells you about the efficiency of their compute. If Lab A and Lab B both produce a model with the same performance, but Lab A used 40% less energy, that tells me Lab A has a more efficient training algorithm or better hardware optimization. Maybe they are using the new Blackwell chips or even the experimental optical interconnects we have been hearing about. In 2026, compute is the most valuable currency in the world. Efficiency is a massive competitive advantage. If I see a model card that shows a huge drop in kilowatt hours per trillion tokens, I know those engineers found a way to do more with less.
Right. And that directly impacts the cost for the end user eventually. If it is cheaper to train, it is usually cheaper to run. Now, let us talk about Hugging Face specifically. When you are on a models page, you have the model card, but you also have the community discussion and the files. How do those pieces fit together for someone trying to be an intelligent reader?
Hugging Face is great because it is interactive. The model card there is often a living document. One thing I always check is the evaluation tab. Many models now include automated evaluations from the Hugging Face Open LLM leaderboard. I compare the lab's self-reported numbers in the card to the independent numbers on the leaderboard. If there is a huge discrepancy, that is a red flag. It might mean the lab used a different prompt format that favors their model, or they are cherry-picking the best results.
I have noticed that too. Sometimes the card says the model is a genius at coding, but the leaderboard shows it is just average. It is all about the evaluation harness they use.
Exactly. And that is another expert-level thing to look for, the prompt templates. A good model card will explicitly show you the system prompt and the formatting they use during training. If you use the wrong format, like using user instead of instruction, the performance can drop by 20 or 30%. If the model card is missing the recommended prompt template, it is basically like a car without a steering wheel. You can get it to go, but you're going to have a hard time pointing it in the right direction.
That is a great analogy. So, to recap the expert guide so far, check the data mixture, look for a detailed decontamination process, scrutinize the limitations for actual honesty, and verify the benchmark scores against independent leaderboards. What about the architectural innovations? Daniel mentioned Gemini Deep Think, which uses a reasoning mode. How would that show up differently in a model card compared to a standard model?
That is where it gets really interesting. For models that use inference time compute, which is the big buzzword of 2026, the model card has to change. It is not just about the weights in the file anymore. It is about the process the model goes through when you ask it a question. An innovative card for a reasoning model should explain the search algorithm. Is it using a Monte Carlo tree search? Is it using a chain of thought verification step? A standard model card tells you what the model knows. A reasoning model card should tell you how the model thinks. It should specify the compute budget per token.
And that is a huge shift. We are moving from static data sheets to process descriptions. I imagine that makes it much harder for labs to keep their secrets.
It does, and that is why you see some labs getting a bit more vague. But the best ones, the ones that want to lead the industry, are still providing that detail. They might not give you the exact code for the search algorithm, but they will give you the high-level logic. If you see a model card that talks about reward-weighted regression during the reasoning phase, that is a huge signal that they are doing something cutting-edge with how the model allocates its thinking time.
I want to pivot a bit to the history again, because I think it informs why we see what we see today. You mentioned Mitchell and Gebru. After that initial paper in 2019, there was a lot of pushback from some parts of the industry, right? People saying it was too much work, or gave away too much trade secret information.
Oh, definitely. There was a period around 2021 and 2022 where people were worried that model cards would just become a way for competitors to reverse engineer models. But what happened was the opposite. The community realized that without these cards, the models were essentially useless for high-stakes applications. If you are a bank or a hospital, you cannot just use a random model you found on the internet. You need to see the audit trail. You need to see the bias testing. So, the market actually demanded model cards. The labs that refused to provide them found that their models were not being adopted by enterprise users.
It is the classic transparency equals trust dynamic. It is interesting how the ethical push actually aligned with the business need for reliability.
It usually does in the long run. And that leads to another thing Daniel asked about, where to find these besides Hugging Face. While Hugging Face is the gold standard for open weights models, the big vendors like OpenAI, Anthropic, and Google often release their most detailed information in technical reports, which are essentially giant, 50-page model cards.
Those can be pretty dense, though. If someone is not a PhD in computer science, how do they navigate a technical report from Anthropic or Google?
You look for the charts. Seriously. Look for the scaling laws charts. These show how the model's performance improves as you add more data or more compute. An innovative lab will show you a smooth, predictable scaling curve. If the curve is jagged or it plateaus early, it tells you they hit a wall. Also, look for the human preference charts. They will show how often a human rater preferred the new model over the old one or over a competitor. If they show those comparisons across a wide variety of tasks like creative writing, coding, and factual recall, it gives you a much better sense of the model's personality than a single benchmark score.
So, it is about looking for the multidimensionality of the model. Not just a single number, but a profile.
Exactly. Think of it like a role-playing game character sheet. One model might have high strength in coding, but low charisma in conversation. Another might be a wizard, with high intelligence but very low health when it comes to following safety guidelines. A good model card or technical report gives you those stats across 20 different categories.
I love the character sheet analogy. That makes it very tangible. Now, what about the small innovative labs? Daniel mentioned them specifically. Sometimes they do not have the resources to write a 50-page report. What should we look for from the scrappy startups on Hugging Face?
For the smaller labs, I look for what I call the recipe. Since they often cannot compete on sheer scale, they compete on technique. Look for things like model merging or quantization details. Model merging is a huge trend right now where people take two or three different models and mathematically combine them, sometimes called Franken-merges. A great model card from a small lab will explain exactly which base models they used and what the merging ratio was. They might say, "We took a model that is great at logic and merged it with a model that is great at conversation at a 60-40 ratio." That is a huge sign of innovation because it shows they are experimenting with the architecture in a way the big labs often do not.
And that is where the community aspect of Hugging Face really shines. You can see the lineage of these models. It is like a family tree.
It really is. You see how one person's innovation in quantization, which is making models smaller and faster so they can run on a phone, gets picked up by another person who merges it with a new dataset. The model card is the documentation of that evolution. If a small lab is providing a clear lineage, telling you exactly whose shoulders they are standing on, that is a huge green flag. It shows they are part of the ecosystem and they are contributing back.
One thing that I think is becoming more important in 2026 is the safety guardrail section. We have seen some models that are incredibly capable, but also incredibly easy to jailbreak. How do you read a model card to understand the safety profile?
This is a tricky one because everyone claims their model is safe. What you want to look for is red teaming results. Red teaming is when the lab hires people or uses other AI models to actively try to make the model do bad things. A high-quality model card will list the specific categories they red teamed, like hate speech, self-harm, or chemical weapons instructions. They should give you the success rate of the model in refusing those prompts. If they just say the model is safe, that means nothing. If they say, "We tested it against 5,000 adversarial prompts in these 10 categories and it had a 99% refusal rate," that means something. Also, look for mentions of Llama Guard or Shield Gemma integrations. Those are external safety models that act as a filter.
And I suppose looking for external audits is part of that too.
Absolutely. We are seeing more third-party organizations, like the AI Safety Institute, that specialize in these audits. If a model card mentions an audit by an independent group, that is a massive gold star. It means the lab was willing to let an outsider look under the hood and try to break their system.
So we have covered data, benchmarks, limitations, efficiency, and safety. If you were to give a listener a 3-minute exercise for the next time they are on Hugging Face, what should they do to practice this?
Okay, here is the exercise. Pick a model you have heard of, maybe one of the newer Mistral variants or a Llama 4 derivative. Open the model card. First, scroll past the benchmark table. Do not even look at it yet. Go straight to the intended use and limitations sections. Read those and see if they feel honest or like boilerplate. Second, look for the training data section. See if they list specific data sets like FineWebEDU or if they just say web data. Third, find the prompt template. If you can find those three things, you already know more about that model than 90% of the people using it. Then, and only then, go back and look at the benchmarks to see if they match the story the rest of the card is telling you.
That is a great workflow. It forces you to understand the context before you get blinded by the big numbers.
Exactly. The numbers are the destination, but the rest of the card is the map. If you do not understand the map, you do not really know where you are when you get to the destination.
I think this is so important because as AI becomes more integrated into our lives, being an informed consumer of these models is like being an informed consumer of food or medicine. You need to know what is in it and how it was made.
It is exactly like that. We are moving out of the era of magic and into the era of engineering. Magic is cool, but engineering is what you build a society on. And engineering requires documentation. Model cards are the foundational documents of this new age.
That is a very poetic way to put it, Herman. I am curious, though. Do you think we will ever get to a point where these are standardized by law? Like, you cannot release a model without a government-approved model card?
We are actually already there, Korn. By now, in early 2026, the EU AI Act is in full effect for high-risk systems. Annex 4 of that Act actually mandates a level of technical documentation that is essentially a super-powered model card. You have to disclose the training process, the data sources, the energy consumption, and the risk management steps. Even in the United States, the executive orders from the last couple of years have pushed the major labs toward system cards, which are even more comprehensive. But the technology moves so fast that the law is always playing catch-up. That is why the community standards on places like Hugging Face are so important. They set the bar higher than the law probably ever will, because the community knows what actually matters for performance.
It is the power of the open source community setting the pace. I love that. Well, I think we have given a pretty solid overview of how to tackle these things. Daniel, I hope that gives you and everyone else a better way to look at those PDFs and README files. It is not just fine print. It is the story of the model.
And it is a story that is still being written. Every week, someone finds a new way to measure these things or a new way to be transparent. It is a very exciting time to be a nerd for documentation. I mean, just look at the new inference time scaling charts. They are basically the new Moore's Law.
You are the king of that, Herman. I can see you getting ready to open another 20 tabs. Before we wrap up, I should probably do the thing we are supposed to do. If you have been listening for a while and you are finding these deep dives helpful, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app. It genuinely helps other curious people find the show.
It really does. We see every one of them, and it makes our day. Especially if you mention your favorite model card or a specific dataset mixture you found interesting. Just kidding, you do not have to do that. But it would be cool.
Only you would want that, Herman. Anyway, you can find all our past episodes, including the ones we referenced today, at myweirdprompts.com. We have got the full archive there, and there is a contact form if you want to send us a prompt like Daniel did.
We are also on Spotify and pretty much everywhere else you get your podcasts. It has been a pleasure as always, Korn.
Likewise, Herman. Thanks for sharing the expertise. This has been My Weird Prompts. We will see you next time.
Goodbye, everyone. Stay curious and read the fine print.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.